William Elphinstone came down the platform looking very smart in his lieutenant's uniform. He stopped in front of them. "Mrs. Kavanagh," he said crisply, "Louise, it looks like we're off in 5 minutes." "Well, you mind you take great care, William," Marjorie said. "Thank you, I will." Louise let her gaze wander away with deliberate slowness. William looked slightly put out, but decided this wasn't the time to make an issue of it. He nodded to Marjorie and marched off. She turned to her daughter. "Louise, that was extremely rude." "Yes, mother," Louise said unrepentantly. How typical of William to volunteer, even though it wasn't his militia, she thought. He only did it to be covered in glory, so he would seem even more acceptable to Daddy, and he would never be in the front line sharing the risk with the poor common troops. Not him. Joshua would. Marjorie gave her daughter a close look at the unexpected tone, seeing the sulky, stubborn expression on her usually placid face. "So Louise doesn't like William Elphinstone. Can't say I blame her, but to be so public was totally out of character. Louise's decorum was always meticulously formal and correct, gratingly so. Suddenly, despite all the worry of Boston, she felt delighted. Her daughter wasn't the meek-minded little mouse any more. She wanted to cheer out loud. And I wonder what started this episode of independent thinking, though I've a pretty shrewd idea. Joshua Calvert, if you laid one finger on her—" Grant Kavanagh strode vigorously along the side of the train, making sure his troops were settled and everything was in place. His wife and daughter were waiting dutifully at the end of the platform, both of them quite divine, Marjorie especially. "Why do I bother with those little Romany tarts?" Louise's face was all melancholic, frightened but trying not to show it. Trying to be brave like a good Kavanagh. What a wonderful daughter, growing up a treat, even though she'd been a bit moody these last few days, probably missing Joshua, he thought jovially. But that was just another reminder that he really would have to start thinking seriously about a decent blood match for her. Not yet, though, not this year. Cricklade Manor would still echo with her laughter over Christmas, warming his heart. He hugged her, and her arms wrapped round his waist. "Don't go, Daddy," she whispered. "I have to. It won't be for long." She sniffed hard and nodded. "I understand." He kissed Marjorie, ignoring the whistles and cheers which rang out from the carriages at the rear of the train. "Now don't you try and prove anything," she said, in that weary, half-censorious way which meant she was scared to the core. So he said, "Of course I won't. I'll just sit in the command tent and let the youngsters get on with it." Marjorie put her arm around Louise as they waved the train out of the station. The platform was a solid mass of women with handkerchiefs flapping from frantic wrists. She wanted to laugh at how silly they must all look to the men on the train, but she didn't because she was a Kavanagh and must set an example. Besides, she might have started crying at the futility and stupidity of it all. In the clear sky above, silver lights flashed and twisted as the Navy squadron changed formation and orbital inclination so that Boston was always in range to one of their number. Garriott was nerving himself up to commit suicide. It wasn't easy. Suicide was the culmination of failure, of despair. Since the return of the dead from the realm of emptiness, his life had become inspiring. He watched a couple make their cautious way down the starscraper's fetid stairwell. Kiera Salter had done well seducing the boy, but then what 15-year-old male could possibly resist Marie Skibo's body? Kiera didn't even have to enhance the physique she had possessed. She just put on a mauve tank top and a short sky-blue skirt and let nature wreak havoc on the boy's hormone balance, as she had done with Anders Bosport. The monitoring subroutine assigned to observe Horgan flowed through the neural cells behind the stairwell's polyp walls, spreading out through the surrounding sectors to interface with the starscraper's existing routines. An invisible, all-encompassing guardian angel. It was checking for threats, the possibility of danger. Horgan was another of Rubra's myriad descendants, cosseted, privileged, and cherished, his mind silently, stealthily guided into the correct academic spheres of interest and bequeathed a breathtaking arrogance for one so young.